Doug Gottlieb, and you are listening to the All Ball Podcast, all basketball, all the time. And man, do we have a good pod for you. We're coming off an unbelievable All-Star weekend. I'm not really an All-Star guy, but I will say Derrick Jones and Aaron Gordon, you know, this kind of plays into what Steve Kerr has said, which is like, look, no disrespect to the old guard, but these young guys are pretty amazing. And they get better and better. Like, we're not devolving as human beings, we're evolving. And so it stands to reason these guys are dunking and doing dunks we never thought possible. But we come off an All-Star weekend where the guys played hard in the fourth quarter. It was a fun game. And, you know, I'll give you one thought on LeBron in a second. Let me just do this on the dunk contest, which I don't think anybody else has said. You know, one of the great things about the Jordan dunk era was I don't remember him missing dunks in dunk contests. It used to be super punitive. You miss a dunk, you miss one, you could survive. You miss two, you're essentially out of the competition. He didn't miss. So maybe that's why they didn't try some of these things, or maybe they couldn't pull them off. But as much as we're searching for why Derrick Jones and, I don't know, Ty, my own feelings have been in dunk contests, which don't really matter. Why do we have to give nines and tens all the time? Right? These guys should be judged on a different scale. They're the best dunkers in the world, and sometimes an average dunk is a five. You know, you do that, and now all of a sudden you have more leeway for true scoring. Because not every dunk is a 10. It's just not. A 10 should be the perfect dunk. A 10 should be untoppable. But when a guy gets multiple 10s, you know, or 40s or 50s or whatever, it shows you that people are, they think perfection has been achieved again and again and again, and life tells us that's not actually the case. The second part is that you can't get away from the fact that Aaron Gordon missed some of these dunks. And when you miss dunks, it leaves an indelible impression in your brain that you're not as good as the other guy. So I don't know who should have won or if he got robbed or whatever. I do know that when I think back to Jordan's era, you couldn't miss a big dunk, and he never seemed to miss a big dunk. Now, as for LeBron, and I said this on First Things First, the TV show, and somehow it's got, I think he should be the MVP of the league because of all the little things that he's done, the leadership that he's shown, the fact that for the most part hasn't been much drama. He's got along and bought into what Frank Vogel wants to do. All that stuff is great. I also think that when you watch in the All-Star game, like, Giannis is just too long and athletic for him. When you watch in the regular season, same thing. When you watch him guard Kawhi Leonard, same thing. And so when I tell people, like, I don't know if he's a top five player anymore, like, well, how can he be the MVP? Well, he doesn't have it every night. He can't bring it every night. He doesn't have, and against the best of the best, like, he kind of have to hide him a little bit defensively. And offensively, he's not always able to do what he wants to do. He's still awesome. And I think you can be the most valuable and not be the best. Oftentimes we give the MVP award to whoever the best player is. James Harden's a better offensive player. He's in the prime of his career. He's averaging 35 points. He's like top five in assists. He's unbelievable. Now, he doesn't play defense as hard or as often as LeBron, but let's not act like LeBron is locking dudes up as soon as they cross midcourt. So I just, you look around the NBA and I think more people than exist on Twitter. Twitter doesn't really understand nuance. I think he's having a great year. The free throw shooting is weird. It's limited in terms of his scoring. And they haven't always been the best against the best competition, most notably the Bucks and the Clippers. But they've dominated everybody else, been consistent, and he's a huge reason why. His leadership, his voice defensively, and believe it or not, he actually has the highest plus-minus defensive rating and the highest win shares of anybody in the NBA. He does a lot of little things. That's why I'd make him the MVP. All right, let's welcome in our guest. He's a great story. Great story. He goes to Lipscomb University, takes them to an NCAA tournament, their first NCAA tournament appearance. All-time leading scorer. Wait to hear how he grew up. You'd think he grew up ball-his-life guy. Couldn't be further from the truth. He ends up signing a two-way after summer league with the Wizards, making it with the Wizards, actually had 28 in an NBA game. And during All-Star break, we got a chance to catch up with Wizards rookie Garrison Matthews.
Be sure to catch the live edition of the Doug Gottlieb Show weekdays at 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
right, so Garrison, let's start at not the very beginning, not like birth, okay? But you played high school in Franklin, Tennessee. Is that where you grew up?
Yeah, it is. I was there when I was like sixth grade or so.
Okay, so that's not where you grew up. Where did you live before Franklin, Tennessee?
I was in Louisville, Kentucky before then.
Oh, why'd you guys move?
I don't know. Maybe most of our family was here, I guess, and job opportunities, I guess, for my parents. I don't really know, to be honest with you.
You have no idea why your parents moved? You're like in fifth grade. They're like, we're moving to Franklin, Tennessee. How far is Franklin from Louisville?
About 3 hours. I mean, I knew my mom always wanted to live there, and I guess they just chose to move, you know?
Yeah, Franklin's a really cool town, like 20 miles from Nashville, right? It's like very, 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 very nice. And you were in the hard scrabble streets of Louisville fighting for your life, and your mom wanted suburban life for you. Is that accurate?
That's it.
All right, so you played football and you played hoop. Like, you're in sixth grade, you moved to Franklin. Were you a football guy or a basketball guy at that time?
I was a football guy for sure.
Quarterback?
Definitely football. I played quarterback for sixth and maybe a little bit seventh grade, and then I transitioned to wide receiver.
Were you always tall, or did you grow late? When did you grow?
I was always kind of the tallest one in my grade a little bit, or at least up there, probably around fifth or sixth grade. And, I mean, everybody kind of knew that I was playing basketball just because of my height, but football was definitely probably my main sport growing up.
So you show up at high school, Franklin High School. You're a ninth grader. You're a ninth grader. At that time, you were a football player who played basketball, or what?
That's it. That's the way I would say it, I guess.
So how did it happen? Like, when did the switch flip, if you will?
Well, I mean, I always just loved football. Like, that was my first passion. It was just always, I mean, Friday Night Lights, man, there's really nothing much like it. But I was always more talented, I guess, in basketball. And I had some FCS looks in football, but no offers. I mean, I broke my collarbone my junior year, and then I had a few offers going into my senior year for basketball. So that's why I knew I was going to do something in college with basketball. But, I mean, obviously, still football was my first true love.
And when you broke your collarbone, what, were you going across the middle and you got smashed? Were you diving for a ball? How'd you break your collarbone?
I was diving in the end zone for a ball. Didn't touch anybody. Just landed on it.
Did you catch the football?
I did. At least I caught it. That's it.
All right, good. So the legend it remains is, like, you know, that boy, okay, he's tough. He broke his collarbone, but he caught the ball. That's the big thing. Were you guys any good at football?
We were. I mean, we you know, it was kind of frustrating. We always got kicked out first round playoffs, but we had like 8-4 or 8-3 and 9-2 records when my junior and senior year, and my sophomore year we weren't very good, but junior and senior year we were pretty good.
So, I like football guys always came in, you know, you come in mid-year, and like the basketball, you're almost like weightlifting guys where it looks weird dribbling the basketball. It takes a while to get kind of the touch of shooting. How did you maintain your skill while playing football?
I didn't really, to be honest with you. I didn't really work on my basketball game much out of the season. To be honest with you, I remember coming in the season going like starting out like 0-17 or 0-20 from the 3-point line. When I first got back, and just being horrible and being like, how do I even have a D1 offer right now to play basketball? So, I mean, it took a little while to get back into it for sure.
So, how good were you in high school with basketball?
I mean, I would say average. I was like at maybe average 12 points, maybe 5 boards, something like that. It wasn't anything special, that's for sure.
So what was the recruiting process like that took you to Lipscomb?
It was super slow. I had a pretty good AAU circuit going into my senior year. That's really when all my offers came. Well, I actually only had like 3 or 4 D1 offers, so I say all, but I had a pretty good AAU circuit, or a couple of tournaments, and Coach Alexander, he knew who I was just from the area. But they had offered a kid before me, and they told me that if he doesn't commit, they'll offer me. So kind of I was really their second choice. But that's kind of how it went for me. I had USC Upstate and UMass Lowell and Austin Peay were the other ones that I got to. So
that's interesting. So they offered some other kid. Who's the other kid that they offered?
His name's Ethan Stair. I think he went on to play at Mercer.
Oh, okay. Yeah, so like when you go into the, you got to do the Michael Jordan thing, right? When you go into Lipscomb Hall of Fame, because he scored like almost 2,500 points, you need to invite Ethan and then like point him out. Like, oh, hey, see, here's Ethan Stair. Okay, he was actually offered the scholarship before me. And if not for him turning it down, I wouldn't have been here.
I know, so I need to thank him.
Yeah. Okay, so you show up. So Lipscomb is in Nashville, right? So it's, uh-huh. I mean, it's 20 minutes from home. You finish up. How well did you guys do your senior year in high school, Franklin, basketball?
We lost in the region semis. I don't know, maybe a little over 500 record. Like we definitely underperformed for sure. I mean, we had all of our, like our starting lineup was like 6'4", 6'5 plus on every guy. Maybe 6'3", I don't know, our point guard was like 6'3". But we were a tall group, and we all played football. So, like, it was kind of our whole bunch. We were all, like, best friends, but definitely underperformed for sure.
Okay, so wait, so who are these? Give me the names of these guys. They're going to download this podcast. What was your crew in high school? A bunch of meathead football players that just happened to play basketball was who?
Yeah, so, I mean, obviously there were more, but, like, my core group would be, like, Carson Young, Jackson Sweat, Booth Page, Joe Crishlin, Zach Muir, and we're all, I mean, still, like, staying in great contact and are best friends since, so.
Yeah, and are they, like, sleeping in your apartment now? Are they living the life through you? Do they believe they're in the NBA as well?
Well, actually, Zach Muir, he stayed with me for the first, because he got an internship with Navy football, and he stayed with me here for the first, I don't know, 4 or 5 months, and he went back and forth from here to Navy and worked with them, but now he's back in Franklin. But those guys, they've got jobs in Franklin, and one of them's doing grad school. Actually, Joe Crishlow, he's a quarterback at BYU right now, and I think he entered the graduate portal transfer. So they're all kind of doing their own thing.
That's pretty cool. Pretty cool group. Although, as you pointed out, you're underachievers in football and basketball, so they may think that they're really cool. Only you have achieved greatness. The rest of them have been underachievers their whole life. By the way, Ethan Stair had a good career at Mercer. He averaged 15 and a half his senior year. I mean, he didn't score, you know, 2,500 points or whatever and make it to the NBA. He wasn't a Sun Player of the Year, but he had a nice little run. So it wasn't like he was a complete, you know, slob that Coach Alexander had slotted ahead of you at the time.
Yeah, I mean, to be honest with you, I didn't really look much at his career, but I always gave him crap about offering him over me.
That's funny. Okay, so you show up at Lipscomb as a freshman. What's your first memory? Which, because remember, like, you, as you told us, like, you're more football player. Like, all right, I'll try this basketball thing. I played some AAU, 12 and 5, you know, like, okay, so what was your first memory of Lipscomb?
My first memory of Lipscomb was hating it when I first got there. I always was the last one picked and pick up. I probably wouldn't even play the first game. I'd have to be picking the loser squad to get on the court. You know, they knew I wasn't very good when I first came in, which I wasn't. You can tell when guys mess with you or not, like if they like you or think you're good or whatever. And I was definitely not one of those guys. That was my first impression of it. So I remember talking to my mom, just feeling like, man, I don't think I belong here. And it was definitely a test to my faith towards myself and all that. So,
okay. So how much did you play your freshman year?
I didn't play much at first, until midway through my freshman year, our best player towards ACL. And I kind of got sprung in there, to where I started playing, I don't know, 20, 25 minutes a game or so.
Who was your best player?
His name is Josh Williams.
Okay, so Josh gets hurt. You're over there pumping your fist on the bench, like, yes, kidding. Okay, he gets hurt. This is 2016. By the way, I'm cheating. I'm looking at all your stats. You end up like kind of underselling it. You know, you average 10 in only 20 minutes. In only 20 minutes, right? So I mean, like you came in starting to kind of get buckets right away. Your first game you started was against who?
Tennessee Tech. I believe.
What was that like?
Do you ask what it was like?
Yeah. What was it like? What do you remember?
I mean, it was crazy. I remember it had been my best game so far in my career there, for sure. It was nice that my best game was the first game I started. It kind of solidified my spot from there on out.
Well, let's see here. Tennessee Tech. So Tennessee Tech? It was at Tennessee Tech?
No, it was at home.
It was at home? You guys lost by 3?
I guess so. I don't remember.
Yeah, December 5th, 2015. You guys lost by 3 to Tennessee Tech. Do you want to know more? Do you want to know more about how you did?
I think I remember I had like 16 or something like that.
You had 16. How about that? It's pretty good. You had 16. You hit 4 threes.
Okay. Right?
You go from like, I don't know if I belong here, to I can do this. I hit 4 threes. Mm-hmm. I played 18 minutes. But that at that point in time, though, okay, you guys were not good. That was, you lost, what, 4 in a row, then 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. You lost, 13 out of 14 games before kind of turning it around once you got into A-Sun play. You got, as you said, you hadn't been great in high school, but you were never bad. What was losing like for you?
It was miserable. I hated it. But it was almost like, to be honest with you, like, I hated it so much, but it was almost like I was used to it, you know? And I was just trying to find a way to just completely reverse that, because in basketball, we underachieved in high school. When we were good players, we should have won more. College, I get to college, we're underperforming. Well, to be honest with you, I don't really know, like, if we should have overperformed, whatever, but it was almost like I couldn't break that cycle of losing, but I hated it more than anything in the world.
Your freshman year gets done, and I read something about, I remember when you were in college, you said something about your freshman year gets done, and what did you do in between your freshman and sophomore year to kind of change your game, to evolve and take that next step?
Something just clicked, man. Me and our post, Rob Marbury, we were like, you know what? We're going to change our diets. We're going to change the way we train. We're going to change the way we think, the way we work out, whatever it may be. We changed everything. And so that was my mindset going into my sophomore year, and we kind of did it together. But I just completely changed the way I worked out. I completely went from partying, doing that stuff, to really focusing on my game, because I realized I could actually maybe do something. And then somebody came into my life that knew my brother, that started working with me and working me out, and completely changed my name. His name's Jordan Romine. Completely changed the way I worked out and helped me out a ton, man. And that's really when everything kind of turned.
All right, let's start with your diet. What did your diet become?
I completely cut out. Well, I tried to completely cut out sugar. Obviously, you know, you have your days, but I try to eat, like, no sugar at all. I eat a lot more protein, cut down my carbs, all that stuff. Like, I would eat pretty much anything before then. I'd go to Baskin Robbins all the time. I'd go to Publix and get those, like, Oreo pies or whatever. And I'd just eat that crap all the time. And I just completely cut that out, all that stuff. And I stopped drinking calories, so all I would have is water and coffee. Black coffee, that's it. So that really, really was a huge help.
You go from 10 a game to 20 a game as a sophomore. Now I should point out, cause I'll be that guy, like, and you know, you guys are an A-Sun team. You start out playing. I mean, it wasn't great, right? You did beat Tennessee Tech. You scored 104 points. You got beat, but outside of that, I think let me see, like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. You lost 8 of your first 9 Division I games. You beat like Piedmont and some other non-D1 or whatever.
Yeah.
Smacked by Cincinnati. And then, of course, you lost by 2 points to Belmont. I want to get to Belmont and that rivalry. It's how close those schools are in a second. But you do all these things, and yet for a while there, before you got to A-Sun play, you guys are still losing. What was that like mentally to be, you're having personal success, but damn, we're still losing these games.
I remember sitting in the locker room with our team and our head coach. We're kind of having a come to Jesus meeting. We're all just super pissed off. Just why are we still losing? And I remember, like, saying in front of everybody, I'm just like, yo, this is embarrassing. Like, I walk around campus just embarrassed that this is happening. And Coach didn't like that too much. Like, even when I graduated, he remembers me saying that, that this is embarrassing. And really, to be honest with you, it felt like everything kind of turned from that point on. We started winning more, and it's something just clicked. I don't know.
Yeah, you guys won. You guys went and won six in a row. Twice, you had 2 6-game winning streaks, which you hadn't had in Division I basketball before. All right, so you get done. You lose to North Florida in the A-Sun tournament. And you guys won 20 games. I think that's first time in Division I basketball. You guys won 20 games. You had personal success. So tell me about Jordan's workouts. How were Jordan's workouts different than anything you had done?
Well, I mean, to be fair, like, I never really worked out outside of the season on my craft. And he kind of taught me that, like, you're not going to be really become what you want unless you really work out. So to be honest with you, man, I come out of the workouts just drenched in sweat, just sore, not able to walk. We do, like, not just set shots, but game like reps. You're coming off screen, this and that, and it's a conditioning workout too. It's not just any sort of shooting workout. It's anything you can think, just going at 110% as hard as you can the whole workout, and that's really what his workouts are about.
I'm sure you came out like, man, Baskin Robbins would be good right about now, and it wasn't.
Exactly.
What was Casey like to play for?
He was a great, great coach. I mean, great X and O's guys. I mean, really knows me. He's got to be one of the smartest guys I've been around. But he's also, like, a super, super supportive coach. He's not one of those guys that's going to sit here and dog cuss you. He'll definitely tell you what you're doing wrong and correct you and get on to you, but he does it in a constructive way where you learn from it. And he's always been super, super supportive of me. And, I mean, I still keep in touch with him. We got a great relationship. But, I mean, I wouldn't be where I'm at in my career if it wasn't for him, that's for sure.
Okay, that year, so you come back for your junior year, right? Now you got, you got it across your chest. You're 20-a-game guy. And in the, like, sixth game of the year, you play Belmont. For people who don't know the Belmont-Lipscomb rivalry, what is that game like?
It's insane. I mean, it may be one of our biggest games all year, to be honest with you. It's, you go into it not really liking those guys. They don't really like you. You don't really mess with them outside of that game. It's definitely a huge, like, prideful game for sure. And obviously I went, I don't know, like 2-6 against them maybe.
Yeah, but your junior year, you swept them. You beat them,
yeah,
beat them twice.
We beat them
So the first game you beat them, you scored 48 in the second half as a team. Mm-hmm. You personally scored 22, 6 boards. You did have an assist. That might've been an air ball. That might not have actually been an assist. Probably was. What was the feeling? What was the feeling like of going into Belmont and beating Belmont?
It was one of the craziest feelings in the world. Just because when Lipscomb hadn't beaten Belmont, probably I think it was like 11 years or something like that, or maybe the 11, right. Whatever it was. But it was just a feeling to be able to do it just for that school, and I mean, you wouldn't really be able to, like, tell unless you were there just how Lipscomb kind of erupted from those wins and how it really, like, kind of brought pride back to the school.
I would guess it was a what's Lipscomb like as a school?
It's a small Christian college. Personally for me, it was a great fit. For me, being my faith being very important to me. I'm a Christian, and that's one of the biggest things in my life. And it was great for me to be grounded there in that. And it's just the perfect fit. It's a small Christian school. There's only about 4,000 students there, undergrad. And, I mean, right in Nashville. So, I mean, you can't really beat that either.
How far from Belmont?
Not even 2 miles.
That's crazy. Crazy. And you swept them that year. Okay, fast forward. You play Florida Gulf Coast. At Florida Gulf Coast, right? At Alico Arena.
Mm-hmm.
At Florida Gulf Coast to go to the NCAA tournament. I've always wondered, you know, like, what is that pressure like? It's not just that you're on the team that has to win to play in the tournament, but you're the guy who has to perform in order for your team to win and get to the tournament. What was that experience like? Yeah, because, yeah, I mean, you had 7 threes, you had 33. I mean, you absolutely balled out. 33-9, three assists and a block in a 108-96 win over FGCU. But what is that like to try and sleep the night before, try and get ready knowing so much of the pressure is on you?
I mean, you can't get much sleep. It's obviously you feel that kind of pressure, but I mean, once the ball is tipped and you get past the first media timeout, it's just another game. But I mean, leading up to that point, I've never had so much adrenaline pumping through me in my entire life. It's just, I'll never forget that moment. That's for sure.
You go to the NCAA tournament and now you're taking on North Carolina. Obviously, every Carolina team's a talented team. That was a talented team with Cam Johnson and Kenny Williams and Luke May. What was that experience like for you?
It was obviously a really cool experience. Obviously, it hurt that we lost, and I didn't play particularly well whatsoever. So it was definitely frustrating. But really, to sit and like realize how far we come as a school, being the first team to ever make it to the NCAA tournament, I mean, you kind of got to put things in perspective. Even though as much as I wanted to win, it was cool to be able to do it for that school.
All right, so you come back for your senior year. Now you've been to the NCAA tournament. You've had all the success. Everyone knows you're going to be good. Did you do anything different? How did you continue to evolve as a player?
I mean, I continued to work. I mean, I realized like if I really wanted to excel and maybe possibly make – I didn't really think I had a chance to make it to the NBA until late in my senior year. But if I really wanted to have a chance to play professionally, I had to get my three-point percentage up because, I mean, I'm not just an athletic scorer or anything. So I really, really focused on shooting, the way I shot, the type of
in terms of what? The way you shot in terms of what?
Like you watch some of my shots. I mean, I'm not particularly squared up to the basket, so I'm really coming off screens really, really hard and just basically jumping as soon as I catch it and turning there and making shots. Like I work on that stuff all the time.
Do you have a number of shots? Like because who we have on before we were talking to? We're talking to Matt Thomas. Of course, Iowa State, now he's with the Raptors. And he said, you know, like, I don't do really numbers in shooting. I do till with feel when I'm feeling, like, from a spot, a shot. I see it go in sometimes. Do you have a number? Like, what is your pattern? What is your routine?
No, I don't usually make it a number unless it's, like, they're set shots and I have to make a certain amount in a row to move to the next spot. But when I'm doing that kind of stuff, I really just, I'll maybe spend 15, 20 minutes of doing one sort of move off a pin down until I really, really feel like we can move on to the next thing. And my trainer, Jordan, he's done a great job of, I mean, with his workouts, he makes it game-like. He's not just sitting there rebounding, passing the ball. He's guarding you and he's making it like it's game-like so that you can really improve. So I don't really like think of a number until we really feel like we've got it. And then we come back the next day and do it again the next day, you know, so.
Had this crazy year, your senior year. You win 29 games, you win the league, but you get swept by Belmont, right? You lose lose by four there, or two there and four at home. You lost a close one to Louisville. You beat Middle, who was really good, right? Another, that's like, I don't know, what is it, 45 minutes outside of Nashville, right? So these are all kind of close books. You lost to Clemson. So give me, like, what are you, your senior year? It's you, Kenny Cooper, Michael Buckland, Rob Marbury. Are you the leader? Are you the vocal leader? Or are you like what was your personality like on
Eli
that team?
Eli Pepper in there. My roommate Eli Pepper.
And by the way, anybody named Eli Pepper, I don't know him, but I'm sure he goes by Pep. Right? Is that accurate?
We do call him Pep. Yeah. See? A lot of people call him Pep. Yeah.
All right. Give me the breakdown of what those dudes are like.
The vocal leaders definitely had to be Rob Marbury. I was always kind of a quiet dude. He didn't catch me really getting on to anybody or telling people what to do or this and that. I kind of just tried to be more of a action leader. I'm not much of a talker for sure, but Rob, he'll talk for sure. He's the loud one, and he was the captain of our team, and he for sure made it known what it is that needs to be done and this and that. And he was a great leader for us. He did all the right things, made the right plays, tried to better the team, whatever way he could. I mean, that's the way he was. Eli, he's, Eli's one of the best teammates I've had. You wouldn't see him on the stat sheet, but he got over 1,000 boards, but you never see him on the stat sheets, but he does everything to make the team better. Sets great screens, plays as hard as he can, just a great teammate and always cheering for others, whatever. Kenny, obviously a great point guard who just transferred to WKU this past year. And I mean, I can't say enough about that guy. He's still a great friend of mine, and he's an incredible player that I wish he got his waiver this year. But I mean, it's always tough when you have a coach that leaves. I mean, I feel like he should have gotten his waiver, but that's another discussion.
No. And he went across the street. Your coach went across the street too. I got to get into that part. But
then Michael Buckland, piece to our. You can't forget him. He's playing right now. Where they have obviously a ton of guys. So he's the one starter left out that didn't leave. But he was a great piece as well. He was a great defender and just a great person as well. So.
You're walking into a gym or walking into an arena. Headphones?
Coach Alexander would not let us. No.
So you had no headphones. So you walk in, you get your sweats on, bag. Okay, you couldn't be a music guy before the game. What? You're in the locker room. Are you super quiet? Are you reading? I mean, you can't listen to music. This has to be really weird. I wonder
we can listen to music when we get in the locker room, but like when we're
just not when you
in,
walk in. Yeah.
Yeah. So I listen to music. I'll definitely pray. That's definitely a part of my pregame. Just kind of get scraped out by the trainer, the athletic trainer.
What's scraped out? Stretched out?
Scraped out. They have this metal grassing tool, and they'll just kind of scrape out your legs and your back, trying to get the soreness out and stuff like that. So I do that. I usually contrast in the cold and hot bath. And that's really about it, to be honest with you.
I hate to bring this up, but you did lose your last game in Allen Arena.
Right? I did.
Right, you're playing Liberty. It's your last game. It's a championship game of the A-10. A chance to go back to the NCAA tournament. What went wrong?
Man, I would say it was my fault for sure. But see, I think we're up one with a minute left, maybe a minute 30 left. We have the ball, and you know, I was dribbling, and I could have shot it. I probably should have, but I looked for one of my teammates on the back door, and just they stole it. It was a turnover and went down. I don't really remember exactly what happened after that, but ended up we having to get in a foul situation. They just hit free throws, and that's what went wrong towards the end of the game. But, I mean, we basically the whole game we let them play at their pace, and Liberty plays so slow, and we're one of the fastest teams in the country. So if we play at their pace, then they've got a great shot to beat us.
You hold like every scoring record there. You took the team to the NCAA tournament. You win 29 games, right? Like at that point in time, mm-hmm. You guys only had one, 29 freaking games is crazy. At that point in time, you were 25-6, I believe. 20 or 25 mm-hmm. and 6. Like, but I gotta think like, I lost my senior night. We lost to Oklahoma. We led by 9 with, I don't know what it was, 5 to go. And I was one of these guys that I couldn't make a free throw. I was just mental case up there. And so I think my coach thought they were going to start fouling, and he took me out. And like, as soon as he took me out, we just lost all momentum. And I had a chance to take an open three, and I hit 2 threes in that game. Like, you remember these games so vividly, right? Than a lot of the wins. You're in that locker room one last time, and now you're like, okay, I thought we were going to the NCAA tournament before today. Do you remember what that group was like when you're together at Allen Arena after losing your last game?
God, it hurt. I mean, that was the most anybody's ever seen that many people in Allen Arena. I mean, it was completely sold out. I've never seen it that packed, and it was crazy. And just, man, I couldn't tell you the feeling, just the letdown. And I still think about that backdoor pass I threw. Like, I should have probably just shot it. But, I mean, it is what it is, you know?
Yep. You get to play in the NIT, and the game which I think people who didn't follow college basketball figured out that you had a shot was NC State, 44 mm-hmm. points. You have 8 threes. What do you remember about the game?
I mean, absolutely insane. But to be honest with you, the biggest thing that I remember is Kenny Cooper hitting that corner three. He stole it, and I hit him in the corner for a three to go up. And then I'll never forget that. And then him winning the game-winning bucket. And those are the two biggest I had 44, but those are the two biggest buckets of the game right there.
And you guys are going to New York City. So for a group of guys who, you know, you started out your career, I don't really necessarily belong here, Mom. And then you get thrust in your freshman year. And now all of a sudden you're senior. You've been to the NCAA tournament. You won the league. You have all these records. Look, it's not the NCAA tournament, but it is New York City. That had to be an incredible feeling, incredible reward for all of your guys' hard work and your hard work and how you had changed so much during your time at Lipscomb.
Yeah, well, we were mindset that, I mean, we didn't make the NCAA tournament and it sucked. So our one goal was to make it to New York and play at Madison Square Garden. And, I mean, you know, you're playing against these guys that, these high major teams that got let down and being out of the tournament. So you never really know whether they actually want to be playing or not in the NIT. So we probably upset a few teams that didn't want to be there. But it was just our whole mindset shifted to where we wanted to go play in Madison Square Garden.
You have 34 your first night. Obviously, you struggled in the championship game. Was it the length? What about Texas did you struggle with?
I mean, they made it tough on every catch. They were doubling. They were denying. They weren't leaving me whatsoever. I mean, Shaka Smart is he's a super smart coach. I mean, he knows what he's doing. He had a great game plan for me, and there was, to be honest, just didn't hit shots. There wasn't really much I could do.
So you lose that game. You lose the championship game of the NIT. You won 29 games. What did Casey say to you after the game?
He was just telling us how proud he is of us and everything that we accomplished and how hard we fought all year long, even despite getting kicked out of the tournament and still playing hard in the NIT. He was just kind of reflecting over the year and stuff like that. It was a super positive speech.
What did you think? Like, what was your honest thinking after? So college is over. You're like, all right, I gotta pick an agent. I gotta figure this thing out. What was your thought process?
Yeah, I had already kind of figured out who it was that I had in mind that I wanted to sign with. There were still guys I was kind of flirting with, but I knew probably who I was going to sign with. And I got lucky enough to sign with the agent I have right now, and it's been an incredible fit from the moment I signed with him.
So, all right, so who is it?
His name's Chris Patrick with the Sports Law Group.
Okay, so you signed with Chris Patrick. So what did Chris say? Like, what was his... What did he think your rookie season as a professional would look like?
Well, see, he was the only one that really thought I could make it to the league. Everybody else was trying to push overseas, and I was like, and so really in my mind, I was like, oh, maybe these guys are right. I'm not going to have a chance to make the league. But Chris was like, no, you got to just get a two-way or some sort of deal, and we're going to make it happen. And sure enough, he made it happen.
Okay, but it's just not that easy, right? Okay, so okay,
yeah,
see, but, you had workouts. What was the best workout you had?
I thought the best workout I had was Phoenix Suns workout. Everything seemed like it went in. I worked out with Grant Williams. Me and him were on a team, and I felt like we were just killing. And I don't think they really had any clue who I was really before then. And then they ended up, they sort of liked me, but then I don't know if I could make it, but that was probably my best workout for sure.
So they don't draft you. No one drafts you. Did you think you were getting drafted draft night?
I thought there was going to be a chance if some of the guys were picked that the other teams wanted before me.
So you go undrafted. Chris calls you right afterwards. He's texting you during it. Like, what's the process like?
Yeah, I'm kind of tripping out, like, wondering what's going to happen because we're kind of talking. He's like, well, I don't know what we're going to get because it sounded like I had a couple offers before the draft for maybe a two-year two-way or Exhibit 10s, this and that. And then after the draft, he's like, well, I don't know what we got now. And so basically I was just going home, like going to sleep. Like I was just like frustrated. And my girlfriend at the time, I was kind of like pushing her off. So I sent her home kind of and was just being rude, and so I went home just trying to go to sleep, just trying to forget the night for sure.
Okay, wait, you go from like, I don't know, I had no idea, to now you're expecting to make it, and now you're blowing everybody off because you're ticked, right? You're in a bad place. Yeah. You wake up the next day, and what happened?
Well, actually, he called me right when I got in bed at midnight that night, And he's like, hey, the Wizards want to do a two-way, and we jumped on it.
So the Wizards do a two-way, so you're like, oh, my gosh, I'm a two-way contract. You call your girlfriend back, you're like, you got to come over, we got to celebrate. Anyway, so so do you immediately fly to Washington? Like, what's the process like?
I flew that next week. I had flown that next week to D.C. to go through mini camp with them before summer league. And so that's kind of what I got to take a week at home and then flew up there.
What did it feel like? Did it feel like I can do this? Was it like Lipscomb all over again where you're not sure if you belong? What was the feeling like?
I didn't feel like I belonged because we had 20-something guys fighting for the summer league spot. And I couldn't hit a shot. I wasn't doing nothing. And I was just like, here we go. And it was definitely like that feeling of being a Lipscomb.
Then there's guys you've never heard of in your life. You're like, that guy's really good. Why have I never heard of that guy?
Exactly.
Okay. So you do make the summer league roster. You go to summer league. Mm-hmm. What was that experience like?
It was cool. I mean, you see all these high major guys that everybody knows about and nobody knows about you, and you're getting to play with these guys. You know, it's pretty cool. And I mean, I didn't play the first two games and then played the last three, and it was one of those things where I knew I wasn't going to be like the high scorer. I knew I wasn't going to get the ball as many times as I did at Lipscomb, but I was just trying to do the little things just to kind of show that I'm a little bit more than just a shooter, you know?
Yeah. So you get done with summer league. Who from the Wizards talked to you?
I didn't really talk to anybody personally. I know Tommy Shepard, the GM, talked to my agent a lot. Really, I didn't talk to anybody personally there at the Wizards.
Okay, so what did Chris tell you the expectations were?
Yeah, they didn't really have any. He didn't really say any expectations. He was just like, there's a chance that you can make it. You need to see. They built this they got this contract to me to see how I do in the NBA games and see if I'm a player that they can maybe sign for next year. It was all about development year. So that was kind of, it wasn't like you're going to come in, you're going to score this amount of points, you're going to do this much for our team. It was just kind of to see and kind of develop me as a player.
Okay, so did you go home? Did you go stay in D.C.? What's that process like when you get done with summer league?
Yeah, I went home for about another month. Just worked out and got to relax before I moved up late August here in D.C. and just started doing workouts with the team and everything before training camp started.
Did you change? Did you crank up your workouts? Was there anything different that you did now that you had seen at least summer league competition?
No, I kind of brought it down, honestly, a little bit because that when you're doing a pre-draft, man, you have no clue how tough it is. Your body just kills. And so I just kind of dialed it down a little bit, just let my body rest because I was so tired. And my body just hurt. So I still worked out pretty hard, but I toned it down a little bit, let my body rest.
So you go back to DC and you go to vet camp. So you show up at vet camp, and I mean, I've known Scotty forever. Obviously, you know, all of a sudden you're like, that's Brad Beal. These are real NBA players. Did you have a first I'm guarding Brad Beal experience?
I remember I've always played pretty physical, and a lot of the guys didn't like how I played, thought I was fouling here and there. And I remember Brad getting pissed at me one day because he thought I fouled him or something. And then I remember hearing somebody on the sidelines, like, you're poking at the bear. And, like, I didn't really care who it was, who I was guarding. Like, I'm still going to play as hard as I can. And then, man, just Brad started cooking me, man. It was like, wow. Just hitting whatever he wanted to do, he made it. So
I have heard he has as good a player, like he's like what, like 32-inch waist, like he's the most like ridiculous body and like just complete freak of nature. Accurate?
Yeah, super athletic, doesn't have an ounce of body fat on him. Great guy too, like great leader. Aside the fact he's a great player, I mean, he's always been great to me and other people, just helping people learn and stuff because we're a young group.
So first preseason game, did you get in?
I got in like either third quarter or fourth quarter. I think it was against the Knicks, maybe. Yeah, it was against the Knicks.
What was that like?
I actually had a decent outing. I think I had like 9 or something like that, and hit a couple tough shots. But yeah, it was a crazy feeling just being on the NBA floor. It was a lot faster than it was in college to me.
It got to be a lot faster, a lot more spread out. Dudes are longer, right? All these angles kind of close up quicker. So
yeah,
you
I
were on. You
had to shoot over that length for sure.
How do you make that adjustment? Like, do you change a workout? Do you have somebody stick up a broomstick? Like, what do you do to change to get used to shooting over that length?
I definitely had to speed up my release for sure, and I had to really kind of work on angles and stuff and where to be on the catch and stuff like that, and not bringing the ball down like a long release where you're like cocking the ball basically. I try to eliminate some of that and just realizing when to pump fake and when not to pump fake and stuff like that too. So,
when did they tell you were going to be on the opening night roster?
I don't think they really said. I mean, obviously the G League season hadn't started, the training camp hadn't started yet, so it didn't count towards my days. So I think my agent had already told me I was going to be on the opening night roster. I didn't really obviously know until it came out, but.
So you walk into the locker room, it's in Dallas, right? First night's in Dallas, and you see your name and your number. That's kind of, you know, for a guy, like you're a football guy, right? Who became this basketball player, who became the all-time leading scorer. To now you're legit in the NBA. Like, I mean, the first dream is I just want to play one night. Granted, you only played 37 seconds that night. You didn't hit a shot your first two games. Still, though, like, it's your name on the back of your shirt. Nobody could ever take that from you. Did you have moments before you started really contributing where you realized, hey, I'm in the NBA?
Yeah, it did for sure. I mean, it's been the biggest blessing I've ever been blessed with. I mean, God put me in a great position to be here, but I was never really satisfied, you know, with just being there. I was happy I was there, but I never felt the feeling of being satisfied, you know, if that makes sense.
Yes, no, it absolutely makes sense. So then you have to go play in the G League, okay, after being in the NBA, which is like it's a step back. But for you, having played in the A-Sun, like, look, you've been able to adjust. There were times early in your career where there weren't people at games. What was the G League experience like?
And I mean, I'm still bouncing back and forth between teams. I'm still playing in the G League. But, I mean, it's different for sure. I mean, it seems like there's not as much space as there is in the NBA. It's like almost like everybody knows spacing better in the NBA, and it's different for sure, I'd say, but I don't take it as like a demotion or anything. I try to take it as just a chance to get better and a chance to learn more and a chance to improve my game, and that really try to look at it that way and not a way of you're not good enough to play in the NBA, you know what I mean?
Yeah, no doubt. Was there a guy, because again, this is kind of my experience, I did a podcast last week with Rajah Bell, who we played in the USBL. He played in the CBA, obviously, before he became a starter in the NBA. We talked to this guy named Sean Colson. He now works guys out. And Sean Colson was the nastiest point guard in the USBL. Was there a guy who you've guarded in the G League? You're like, dude, I'd never heard of that guy, and he is nice. Like, he's really, really good.
I don't even remember him in his – well, I know the Martin twins for – I knew who they were in college, but they were – in the G League some, and they were definitely tough to guard. But I remember this Windy City Bulls guy. I still don't even know his name, but I remember him just shaking me one time, and I'm just like, where did he even go? So
you get called back up, okay? You get called back up, and now you're starting to get minutes, right? Now you're starting to get minutes, and you're starting to get opportunities. You take on the Miami Heat, and I know how it works with younger players. You get to play on back-to-backs. You get to play when guys are exhausted. December 30th, last year, you get 29 minutes against the Miami Heat. You have 28 points. All right. Mm-hmm. So, like, did you know, like, is it one of those things where, okay, so first, when you're a bench player, when you're a two-way player, are you working out the night? Are you doing the first bus and you're doing an hour workout before the game? Like, what's your day like when you're going to a game now?
For me, it's been like I'm typical as like the starters. I mean, you have your typical 15-minute workout. You have either a meeting or us younger guys, we have like an hour walkthrough like the early that morning to go over stuff and get extra work in and stuff like that. But it's not like an hour like strenuous workout that we're doing, you know. Earlier in the year when we were, um, when I didn't play much, I think I had to play a little bit of 3-on-3 during one of the practices when we were on the road, while the other guys were just kind of getting up shots and stuff. But they really kind of took it easy on me because I've had some injuries this year I've dealt with.
So tell me about that night and what it felt like. Did you know, like, one, does Scotty come to you and say, hey, you're going to play a bunch tonight, or you just have to be ready every night?
Well, I just have to be ready. Nobody really tells me, but I knew I had a chance to get in because Brad wasn't playing. We had some injuries we were dealing with, so I knew there was a shot that I was going to get in, but I didn't know I was going to play 29 minutes for sure.
When did you know you had it going?
When I remember Tyler Harrow was closing out on me, and I hit a little two dribble to the left pull up and hit it, and I was like, well, if I can do that, I can start hitting shots. I could really put together a pretty good game. That first shot really kind of got me going.
All right, Tyler's known for saying I'm a bucket, right? Not being afraid, you can't guard me. Was he talking to you?
Mm-hmm. He did not. I didn't hear him say anything the whole game.
Nothing? What do you think of his game?
Unless I didn't hear it, I don't know.
Yeah. What do you think of Tyler's game?
I guarded him a little bit. I know he hit a couple tough shots against us, but, I mean, he's a shifty dude. I mean, I've watched highlights and stuff. I think he can play. He's not a joke, for sure.
After that, when you have a game like that, do guys look at you, treat you any different, or is it the same? Like, you go out and you're like, you have 28 in an NBA game as a rookie. I'm just wondering if now people treat you differently in that locker room and in walkthroughs and in practice.
I wouldn't say they treat you any differently or a little bit. I mean, you're still just one of their teammates and stuff like that. But I mean, it's almost like you can feel a little bit of respect. Like they know that you can play now. Like you finally proved that you can do something. You can almost kind of feel it a little bit. It's not like anybody was doing any intentional or anything like that, but you know.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I get it. Where were you when Kobe died?
I was at my brother's house, I believe.
How'd you find out?
Yeah, I was at my brother's house. Somebody texted me, and I was like, which Kobe? And I was like, because like I was just in disbelief. Like, you can't be talking about Kobe Bryant. There has to be somebody else you're talking about. And it was just, and then I looked at Twitter, and Twitter was going crazy, and I was just like, oh my goodness.
Who was your favorite player growing up?
I was a big LeBron fan.
So were you anti-Kobe? Because I wasn't, like, I grew up in Southern California. He's a little younger than me, and we became friends. But I wasn't really, I didn't love the way Kobe played. I don't know. I just wasn't I respected him, but he wasn't, like, one of my guys. What were you like in terms of when you watched Kobe as a kid growing up in Louisville and then later in Franklin?
Yeah, he was never a guy that I was just, like, loved watching play. I mean, I definitely respect him like you did, and I love like the way how fierce and how big of a competitor he was. I mean, that definitely I respected, but I never really followed his game, to be honest with you, like that. Like, I was just always just loved the way LeBron played.
What was it like to go to the gym to be around the guys? Like, were you in G League at that time? Were you now when you're like?
Because I was hurt at that point. Like, I had just gotten hurt, and I was sitting out. And I remember going to – we were in Brooklyn. We were at the first time I think I saw the guys afterwards. We were at the NBPA. We were doing – they did, like, a little – we had, like, a little practice, and they were having, like, a Kobe tribute video up there. And it was they were having some pretty emotional talks in there for sure. It was a sad day.
Yeah, no, it's a crazy kind of run in the league. I think because it affected a lot of people differently. There are a lot of players, a lot of guys who did love Kobe, but I think everybody, even the guys that weren't Kobe guys, as he became a guy who finished playing, you know, it was people who loved the work ethic and the toughness, and they took that part as the, you know, the mama mentality. But and then there's also just the mortality of, like, NBA players don't die. They just don't, right? It's not like football players that football players seem to die younger. Basketball players don't.
Yeah, it's definitely crazy how much of an impact those guys have on just not even just like guys like us, like in the NBA, but like just everybody, you know?
Yeah, it's been everywhere. The guy who's been the coolest to you on the Wizards is who?
Let's see. I mean, Brad's been great. I mean, just from when I asked him questions and this and that, and To be honest with you, I love talking to Jan Mahimi. He's a big vet. He actually took me out and bought me some clothes one day. I mean, he's a great guy. He just loves everybody. He's always got a smile on his face. I mean, he's been probably the coolest guy to me on the team for sure.
Is there like a text chain of all the white bench shooters? Like, do you guys all have each other's numbers and you guys all like, ah, I got 100 up today, made 1,000 today. Is there a brotherhood of white shooters?
Well, I haven't made it yet, so I don't know. Maybe they'll add it to me over here a few years down the line. But I remember I was watching Corbin work out before one of our before we played them in preseason. I was like, you know what, I just need to go ask him, like, kind of about his regiment. And I went up and asked him before our game just kind of what he does and how he's made it and how he's stuck. And he gave me about like a 10-minute rundown of what he did. And I mean, it meant a lot that he didn't have to talk to me at all, but he just took 5 to 10 minutes out of his time to just kind of tell me what he does and just give me some advice. And that meant a lot.
Have you ever heard, do you know this thing that he does? He does some one crazy workout every summer that like mm-hmm. is, he did this. Yeah. Next time you see him, you got to ask him. He did this thing one summer where his trainer's like, all right, we're going to drop a boulder or some sort of big rock, you know, off of Santa Barbara in the water, and we're going to take a boat, and then we're going to swim out to this one spot and then dive down and as a team, like, lift this rock up to the water. And they just kind of figure out, you know, and then they do all kinds of something extreme every summer just to mix it up. Yeah, Korver, that's his deal. Like, I'm going to do something different every summer to kind of push my body but do it in a different way.
I've never heard of that. Sounds cool, though. I would definitely be interested in that.
See, you need to get on the white guy shooter text chain, and then you would be exactly. Then you would know these stories.
I need to do that.
for somebody who hasn't seen Kyle Korver, and like, look, you're a great shooter, right? To watch a guy like that work before a game, how impressive! Like, try and give somebody who's never seen a great shooter shoot in a one on none workout. Like, what do you think percentage of shots he makes are?
It had to have been 80%. I mean, it looked like the dude never missed, and it was off balance threes, it was off the move, all this. And it was just fun to watch and really kind of see like where I could be maybe later on in my career. I mean, it was just fun to watch for sure.
No, it's crazy ridiculous. Like, I remember I played in Russia, and I remember like I walked in like when you go into practice and you just like. And you know, I was obviously wasn't a good shooter trying to recapture like my shooting confidence, whatever. And these guys just, and then, you know, you watch NBA guys, they just never fucking miss. Like, you guys never miss. I mean, it's insane. I saw this video. Who was it of? I can't remember who it was. You know, guy shooting after the game. And I don't think people understand how good NBA players are. You mentioned at the end of your freshman year in college, change your diet, dedicate yourself. Jordan started working with you first time in your life, gave up, you know, fast food and try to give up sugar as much as you could. What's going to take you from two-way guy to making it to rotation guy? What do you plan on doing to take that next step?
I think really, really just sitting down and studying the game. I've never been really that big of a film guy where I actually sat down and studied. I think really kind of studying that and studying different guys and working on kind of just being a team defender and working on concepts and ball screens and that kind of stuff. I think that really could help me because really when I mess up, it's a team defense thing. I'm messing up some sort of a concept. There will be every now and then I'll mess something up like a play or something, which I mean, it's not often, but it's mostly on the defensive end that's going to keep me out. Whether it be messing up a concept on a ball screen or not being at the right place at the right time, that's really where I'm going to take my game to the next level and hopefully stick.
If you are going to give
nights where I miss shots, so
if you are going to give advice to a high school kid who's a good player like you were, who's trying to figure stuff out, like what do you tell them?
I tell them to really figure out what's most important to them. If it's relationships with people. And put everything into that. If it's working on your craft, put everything into that. You're going to have a very, very small circle if you're super, super focused on bettering yourself and your craft. Because I'm telling you what, there's not a lot of people who put up with you being in the gym at all hours, all the time. And dealing with the frustrations of sports and dealing with how much time you got to commit to that. I mean, you're really going to have a small circle, and especially like when you have friends that want to go out on Friday and Saturday nights, and you're waking up the next morning to go to work out because you can't go out. Like, you're going to lose friendships. That's just the way it is. And I the advice that I would give is to find out what's really truly important to you and just work at it as hard as you can, and don't stop.
This is the most important question. How do you maintain your confidence? Because, you know, you've had bad nights, right? You have bad days. Now, maybe you're to a point now where you might be kind of past that, but there's, you know, there's even doubt I heard in your voice when you're like, I get to, you know, the camp before we go to Summer League, there's 23 dudes, or, you know, now I'm guarding, I'm guarding Brad Beal, one of the top 10 players in the NBA, and he's cooking me. How do you process that doubt and not allow it to affect you?
I mean, I'm not going to lie and say that there's never doubt that crosses my mind, because there, even now, like I'm in a slump right now and it's tough to deal with and I get frustrated. But I just think back to all the little slumps that I've had and all the work that I've put in to get to this point. And we all go through slumps. It's how we, once we hit adversity, it's how we deal with that and how we come back from that. And I really try to hang on that. And I try not to look at that future outcome like me fighting for a contract. I try not to think of that outcome. I really, really try to focus on what can I do today to get better. And if I just focus on that, I mean, I know the amount of work I put in, and I have confidence in that. So if I just really try to focus on that, then I can't worry about anything else. You know, I think the outcome will speak for itself if I just do what I can today.
Last thing, you mentioned your faith is really important to you. You went to a small Christian school. You grew up in a part of the country that's that faith is important. You're in the NBA, and there is a perception, or you're in the G League, there's a perception that, guys aren't into that. How hard is it to live the lifestyle you want to live while competing at this level of basketball?
I think it's tough. Just the fact that you have practice Sundays mornings when usually church is, you travel all the time, and you have so many temptations that are out there. But we have things in place, like we have chapel before the game, and I'm fortunate to have a guy on my team that we every now and then we'll meet and do a Bible study and this and that. And if it's that important to you, then you'll find time to work on your faith. And that's something that I've really tried to hang on to, is, man, not getting caught up in the lifestyle and just remembering where I came from and who I really play for and who really, I had to put in work to get here, but God blessed me with this talent. I didn't just do it on my own. I really have to hang my hat on that. He got me here for a reason. And if I sway from any of that, I mean, it could be taken away from me in a second. And so I really, I've been blessed to grow up in a Christian family and blessed to have people around me that have pushed me in my faith. And so I really try not to get caught up in that sort of lifestyle. And they put things in place that can help you with your faith, like chapel before and everything like that. So, I mean, it's not as hard as people may think it is, but it's something that I tried to consciously every day improve on.
Okay. I mentioned that was the last thing I lied. Casey goes from Lipscomb to Belmont. How does that sit with you?
It hurt. I guess I would say it hurt a little bit. I wouldn't say I was shocked, but I was, but he spent, I don't even know how many years there. He went there, played there, coached there. And all the stuff that he's done for me. I mean, there's so much stuff that nobody knows that he's done for me. And just supported me and helped me through life.
Give me one. Give me one. This is a great chance to say thank you. Give me one thing that he's done that people don't know about.
Just like when you think you can't make it, and his door is always open. If you have any sort of off the court issue that you're struggling with, like family wise or like something in your life that you're struggling with, you can sit in his office and he'll talk to you about anything. And I had issues in my life that I was struggling with, and he sat down and he really cares about you as an individual, not just a player, not just somebody that's improving the program. He allowed me to come in and be honest with him, and he's a man of faith too. So he's a guy that's like, judge you, and I'm telling you, man, I can't thank him enough for what he's done for me. And like, it's not just him. I have like the assistants too. They they're the exact same way. Coach Otiliano, Coach Draven, Coach Isham, they've been amazing to me as well and prayed for me and helped me through a lot of tough times in my life. So, I mean, all four of them, man, I can't thank them enough.
Well, listen, you got a fan in me. I was a fan from the second I read things about you changing your diet and workout and watching you grow as a player. And now, you know, when you play in the NBA, you're playing for a guy who I grew up idolizing in Scotty, which is pretty amazing. You should download the pod that I have. I have like a 2-part pod with him. It's like an hour and a half or whatever. He's got amazing dude. And we talked about you a little bit this summer when he was back, when we were actually doing yoga together. In the meantime, you'll be surprised. Like you'll have fans everywhere, from guys that watched you in the Garden last year to NC State to know your story when you played in the NCAA tournament and now that you've made it. So whatever slump you're in shooting wise, the next one's going in. I can't wait to see you play some more.
I appreciate that. It means a lot.
Hey, listen, it was great catching up. Thanks for taking time out of your busy schedule.
Last thing, man, I didn't get to talk about how and thank and appreciate how much my family's been there for me to get me to this point as well. And they're my rock for sure, and they helped me get to this point, so I can't thank them enough.
Yeah, like this. Here's a question. This is an honest. So I'm a dad now, right? I got a 10-year-old son.
Yeah, I got you.
Okay. So how should I be? Like, how do you do it? How do you push? Because my dad was a former coach, and my dad, he didn't know any other way. He just pushed. He just get in the gym. Just figure it out. You know, he was, and probably it ended up killing my shooting because he was constantly trying to fix it and tinker with things. You know, having lived it from the other side, what you mentioned how supportive your family is. What's the best way to be?
Let me put it this way. I was growing up through high school, you know, you see these parents that are super involved and like yell and talk to the coach and be like, why aren't you playing my son this and that? And it rubs me the wrong way. I am so thankful that I had parents that kind of just sat in the stands and were quiet and watched. And whenever I had a bad game, they were there for me. If I had a good game, they were there for me and just supported me and never told me, weren't sitting there coaching me after the game and be like, you could do this and that better. Like, I can't tell you how important it was for me growing up that they were the quiet parents in the stands that weren't making a fool of themselves, to talking to the coach, making you look like an idiot, to being like, why aren't you playing my son more? I'm telling you that if you navigate it that way, then it ain't going to work out for your son. I know that way.
Yeah, my thing now that I try to do is I try and pick out one or two things he does well that he may not have realized that I saw. You know, like we've been working on getting in the lane and jump stopping. And you know, and making a play and not just going, you know, putting your head down, just going. And, you know, he drove in last game and all of a sudden there's, you know, he's little and he's in fifth grade. He's playing against sixth graders that are like holdbacks. So he's like 2 years younger and he's tiny anyway. He drove in there and he, you know, he pivoted and made a pass out of it and kid made a bucket. And you know how kids are, like, he wanted me to talk about his jump shots he made. I was like, you know what the best thing he did was? You got in there, you jump stopped. So I've tried to be. I struggle. I probably will never be the fan in the stands that doesn't say anything, but I do want to be supportive. And obviously you wouldn't be where you are unless you had that group behind you, you know?
Yeah, for sure.
All right, brother.
It's
we'll
been
get
a blessing, man.
I can't imagine. Well, more to come, and thanks so much for joining us. We'll catch up soon.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
Be sure to catch the live edition of the Doug Gottlieb Show weekdays at 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
Hey, my thanks to Garrison Matthews. I hope you appreciate that. I do. I love learning about guys' stories and how they made it. Remember, you can listen to the Doug Gottlieb Show daily, 3 to 6 Eastern, 12 to 3 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, the iHeartRadio app, any of our hundreds of affiliates nationwide. Make sure you tell friends. Tweet this out, man. Send it to your friends. All Ball, we bring you different perspectives, different ideas, different personalities, people, and their stories in basketball. Chris Mooney, by the way, head coach of Richmond, longtime friend of mine, son of a bus driver, really interesting personal story, Princeton alum, scored 1,000 points there. He's going to join me on our next All Ball. So anyway, download, subscribe, rate. Thanks so much for joining me. I'm Doug Gottlieb, and this is All Ball.